Record, and here we go. This is Katie Harth with Mission Network News, and today I've got Noel Bacchetti on the line of Asian Access. We're going to be talking about a couple of things. We're going to lead off with Bangladesh, where we've shared a couple stories about rising tensions, and some of our other partners have said that the violence and threats are ISIS-related. Noel, what are you hearing?
Well, you know, Katie, first I'd like to put the whole thing in context in that in the Asian regions, especially in Muslim regions, there is a real advance going on in terms of the gospel. One of our board members, who's a respected missiologist, just did a major presentation on kind of the state of missions. And he said, we're in a period where more and more people are becoming Christians, especially from Muslim context. And he said, we're getting a pushback at the same time. In other words, people who are really, really upset about that are pushing back. He also said this is consistent with previous history. In other words, this has happened over the centuries, that the gospel will advance in a new area and people get upset and scared and they push back. So that's sort of a general context. In particular, as best as we can see what's going on, which, and admittedly, everybody's view is limited, it's almost like there's ISIS wannabes out there now. In other words, you've got this ISIS phenomenon in Syria and Iraq, but everybody can see what they're doing, you know, including other disaffected folks in other parts of the world. Bangladesh historically has always been known for its tolerance. It's a Muslim-majority country. I've been there, you know, several times. And all of our colleagues and friends there have said, until recently, I mean, they've been known for the fact that people get along. So this is really a new phenomenon. And some people are thinking it's just folks have seen what ISIS is doing. And to some degree, I mean, you don't have to sign up. I mean, anybody can just say, well, we can do that too. So, you know, it's possible it could be more directly organized, but that's not the sense yet, at least, that our folks are getting. But what is surprising is just in the recent months how dramatically everything has spiked up. Like in about 6 to 7 months, from virtually nothing in terms of this kind of violence to having quite a bit of violence.
And you share some of what has happened in your conversation with me. Could you share with our listeners how this violence is affecting your church partners or your leadership partners?
Sure. One thing is there's a lot of stuff going out over social media. So, for example, the various leaders, and these are Christians but also Hindus. So, again, it seems to be Muslim extremists who are targeting people who aren't Muslim. And in Bangladesh, that would be primarily Hindus and then Christians. But leaders in both of these areas are getting texts saying, you know, make sure to eat your favorite foods over the next few days because we're going to kill you in 5 days. Or plan your funeral, you're going to be dead in 3 days. So there's an assault through social media. Also, pastors are being approached by folks saying, oh, hey, we're interested to talk about Christianity. We want to know more about Jesus, and they'll come into their homes and then they'll attack them. So there was a pastor we know who that happened. He had actually more than one conversation with these folks, and then in the third or fourth conversation, they jumped him. We had another pastor that we know who some people approached him at like his doorway and said, come on out. We want to talk with you about Christianity, but the word's getting out. So he said, you know, I don't think so. I mean, I'll talk to you from here. But no, I'm not going to come out into the street. And then when they realized they couldn't get him out, they started yelling and threatening him. Just about, I think it was 1 week ago, the secretary to one of our leaders, some of her family members, they were at home at night asleep, and somebody just broke out one of the windows, I suppose, with this gun and started shooting. And three people were shot inside the house, all wounded. One, the bullet was still in his stomach. They weren't sure if they could get it out or not. One of the other people might lose their hand. It's very tense. Now, in fairness or in context, in addition to people like Hindus, there's even been attacks on random foreigners. So, for example, there was a leader of an Italian NGO, just a regular secular nonprofit social service agency, who was shot on the street in Dhaka. Somebody just walked up to him and shot him. And our colleague has told us the government is stepping up. They've, for example, they've offered protection to people who have been threatened. And they've gotten on the television and radio with warnings saying, hey, foreigners, stay off of, you know, buses and transportation like that. Be aware. So the government is aware. The government is, you know, not happy about it. They're trying to step up. But everybody's kind of scrambling as this has been happening. So this is the context of what's happening right now and in the past few months.
And for your partners, do you know if any of those threats were from JMB?
I have not heard any specific ID names like that. So if there have been, we don't know it, or our people haven't meant. Like I said, we haven't heard anything in terms of specific names or organizations, just that these things are happening.
And how is A2 is also a name for Asian Access. How are you guys responding and helping assure the pastors that you partner with?
Well, we just had a session about 3 weeks ago, and our faculty often come from other countries. And so the faculty is a man from Australia who's done a lot of work there. And, you know, we're holding the sessions in protected areas where we're trying to be careful. He sent quite an email, though, for like prayer, just saying, he said, people are about as frightened as I've ever seen. And there was another session several months ago that got postponed where everybody said, you know, this probably isn't a good time to travel. So it's kind of a balancing act in the sense that we're trying to be sensitive to protection, but people are also, you know, not unlike what's happened here. Things happen, right? Like in San Bernardino, and what do you hear? People say, we're not going to stop, you know, regular life. We're not going to let these people win. There's some similar, you know, sentiments. People don't want their lives to stop. So it's trying to juggle not letting the terrorists, in a sense, win by paralyzing your whole life to, we got to, you know, pay attention to this. And again, for context, this is in the context of there is a lot of genuine interest right now in the gospel. One of our leaders is involved with university work, reaching out at universities. And he said there's a lot of students now, Muslim students, who are interested in the gospel. Muslim young people are being disaffected on a lot of levels for a lot of reasons in a lot of this part of the world. So he said there's true, genuine interest. So part of their challenge is being able to discern between the students who are genuinely interested and then students who are actually infiltrators. They're pretending to be interested so they can infiltrate these groups. So it's kind of a turbulent time on all these levels, because you've got real problems, you've got real threats, but you also have genuine interest. And, you know, they're seeing movement they haven't seen in a long time. So it's just, it's really, you know, dynamic on a lot of levels.
And what can our listeners do to help?
Well, definitely be praying and keep these folks in mind. One thing that's so true in these situations is folks can feel like, boy, nobody knows what's going on. Nobody knows what's happening to us here, because they can feel somewhat isolated. So when they know that believers all over the world are trying to stay aware, are praying, that means a lot. It really does. And the prayers themselves, of course, mean a lot. It wouldn't be out of the question for here in the West for believers to get in touch with the government. I mean, our Congress, and say, how aware of are you guys of this? Are we going to do something about this, or is there some support we're going to provide? Because back to the whole ISIS component of this, whether this is, you know, wannabes, unregulated ISIS, whatever you want to call it, we're in some sort of a transition, obviously, where, you know, the whole world's got a problem on their hands, and we're either going to all step up or we're not. And if we don't, there's going to be consequences. So for people to say, yeah, we need to understand what our government's going to do with this spreading global issue that we're still even trying to get our minds around. You know, what is it? How does it work? What do you do about it? I would say those are two things. Third is if they are in any sort of relationship currently with missions or organizations or people in Bangladesh, make sure you're in direct touch with them as you can. See how they're doing. See if there's any specific assistance they might need. I don't honestly know what that would be, but just the fact that you would be reaching out to them, letting them know you're aware of the situation and trying to see what you can do, again, will mean quite a bit.
And I just remembered that you guys have a persecuted pastors fund. Is that helping or being used in Bangladesh too?
It is. And thanks for remembering that, because I tend to forget those sort of things. But you're right. We do. And so that is a fund that we have. It's ongoing. And so as situations arise, that specifically that fund can assist, then we will, you know, step up to meet what that need is. We take that on a case by case basis.
Okay. And if it's okay, can I switch gears and talk about Nepal?
Absolutely.
Okay. Earthquake recovery is being kind of complicated by the fact that there's also this trade embargo, and it's really stretching people thin. Your partners are telling you the shortage of fuel is really affecting them. Can you fill us in on some of those details?
Yeah, quick context. Nepal passed the first ever constitution in the history of their country in September. And in that part of the world, one of the big issues with any kind of constitutions are, what kind of a country are you? Are you a secular country? Are you a religious country? And in this case, the pressure was, are you going to be a Hindu country? 2 years ago, India elected a radical right-wing hardline Hindu group called the BJP, and that group has been putting pressure on people all over the world, including Nepal, who shares a border with India. So India was watching this constitutional issue closely. Well, they narrowly passed a secular constitution in Nepal, and Christians were part of the coalition. It was a multi-faith, multi-ethnic coalition that said, we want religious freedom, we want a secular constitution. In retaliation, within about 1 week, India blockaded the border with Nepal. So I do want to kind of clarify, this is not a trade embargo. This is a physical blockade of the border between Nepal and India, and that border is where essentially 99.9% of Nepal's resources come. In other words, their fuel, their oil, their gas, their everything, their cooking gas, food, supplies, everything. There are roads to and from China, but those roads are very small and really not in good shape. So essentially all their supplies come through India. So they basically just blockaded it. They made up some excuse like, oh, there's problems with your roads, or the customs guys, you know, there's problems with your inspections. But flat out, it's like, we don't like the constitution you passed. We wanted a religious constitution, and we also think you're going to persecute the Hindus who live along the border. So we're basically going to blockade you. And that's been going on since September. So they're cooking with wood. The hospitals are running out of medicine. Food is getting scarce. They're having to, you know, self-generate basically everything they can come up with. So it is a tough situation.
And why isn't the rest of the world doing anything about it?
Beats the heck out of me. I mean, that's the $64 question. Sad to say, I think a lot of it is Nepal is a small, relatively isolated country. It doesn't have a lot of natural resources. It doesn't really have anything, in a sense, that the rest of the world is in need of that they can leverage. So India is a big, powerful country with lots of things that they can leverage. And so, unfortunately, it gets very, very, very little attention.
Similar in a way to the Bangladesh story we just talked about, some people still want, they're still trying to live as normal, obviously conservatively as they can on resources. But I understand your partners are trying to put together a Christmas party of some sort.
Well, I will say this for the Nepalese. They are resilient. I mean, they have really stepped up, and they're trying to do everything they can to live how they can. And that would include the secular government and, interfaith faith groups like Christians and others, Buddhists and whatnot. And people in Nepal will tell you, I mean, they are poor and they are struggling, but they will step and say, hey, we have never been colonized. And that's a big deal for them. You know, India is a big, powerful country. They were colonized for hundreds of years. So these people are tough, and I respect them for that. So they are still trying to organize a Christian celebration of Christmas, and they've invited the president and the prime minister. About 3 years ago, for the first time ever, Christmas was made a legal holiday in Nepal. It never was for hundreds of years, but the Christian leaders were able to get that done. So 3 years ago that happened, and they actually on national television televised a program where first the Christian leaders explained what Christmas was and is, and then they actually televised a Christmas service. So the government's been supportive of these efforts. So they're trying to get still some sort of a party together. I don't know with what, but they're going to give it a try. And that, I mean, those are the people in Nepal. They don't give in easily. I mean, I'm very, very impressed with them.
Any word yet on if the prime minister, president are going to come to the party?
Haven't heard anything yet. We're trying to keep in touch. Our folks are very busy. So, Nepal could need prayers of all kinds, but that would be one you could throw into it because it would be great. That would be a big gesture of support. All along the lines. And I do want to mention one other thing real quick, Katie. There have been groups that have come into Nepal to help, well, basically with earthquake relief. We were there with a group from Japan doing earthquake relief when that blockade began. So we were there when it happened. But very soon, another group from the U.S. is heading over to help with earthquake relief and then whatever else, you know, is involved with this blockade. And then in about a month, a group from my local church and my wife and I will be heading over. And so even with all of the problems they've got, they're still saying, come on over. There's work to do. We're going to do it together. And so, you know, in about a month, I'll have more of a firsthand update for you on what's going on over there.
And we look forward to that. For now, though, how can our listeners either get involved? I assume it's too late to actually go on the trip, but how can they help send people or send funds?
Well, anytime you can contact Asian Access, and if you are interested in taking groups over, contact us. We can arrange that. So that's good anytime. And they're very open to people coming. They need prayer big time. We still have a fund that we collect money for. And in fact, we just sent over some more funds recently because they're still trying to do earthquake relief and they're just trying to scrape together with whatever resources they can come up with. Contact Asian Access on a practical basis. We're moving ahead just like our friends are moving ahead. Beyond that, again, any kind of pressure that you can put at anything on elected officials. I've done this, you know, I mean, again, it hasn't changed anything yet, but at some point the U.S. has, you know, got a moral obligation to say, hey, India, this is crazy. You know, what are you guys doing? And, you know, you just hope that when the timing's right, our leaders will know, you know, what to do. But I think it's important for believers here, again, to say, look, we're aware of what's going on in the rest of the world, and we've got to speak up when the time's right. And this is one of those times.
What should people pray for?
Well, one, the blockade to end. I cannot figure out, honestly, why it's still continuing, except maybe pure cussedness. I don't want to bog you down too much here, but there's been some real seismic shifts within India. India has federal elections about every 5 years, but then the different states of India, of which there are 29, have state elections. Well, a year after BJP was elected, they lost the election in Delhi state, which is kind of a government state like Washington, D.C. And people thought, oh, that was just an aberration, you know, but they lost. Well, in November, and I was in India at the time, there's a big state in northern India called Bihar. It's very important in the country. They had their state elections, and Prime Minister Modi and his right-hand man literally spent a month in the state of Bihar campaigning on that election. It was that important to them. Well, the BJP got annihilated. the opposition won big time, and that like startled. They were not expecting that in India, although many people were delighted. Because then the social media in India started, you saw these tweets, we're not about hate speech. We're not, you know, we're not about it. We didn't elect you to create a Hindu state. We elected you to fix the economy. And things had gotten so bad in that campaign, Katie, for example, the BJP people in Bihar were going, you know what, if the opposition is elected, they're going to force Hindus to eat cows. I mean, it was getting down to that level, you know, just kind of scare tactics. But it didn't work. That could be significant, that if people are starting to push back in India and go, wait a minute, you know, we've had enough, that would be huge. So, you know, another big step they could take is if they ended that blockade. And I, again, I don't understand why they haven't, but you know, somehow, just some way for that to change, that would be significant.
And we'll pray for the Christians as well in India, because often they get kind of thrown in the middle of all the religious conflict. And so, yeah, any comments on how the religious leader or religious partners in India are faring?
Yes, I can. One thing that BJP did as soon as they got elected is they threw out all the main leaders in the educational system and replaced them with party hacks. So they're redoing the curriculum in India to be really pejorative, like pro-Hindu. And so our main leader in India said, in about 10 to 20 years, you're going to have a whole group of young adults who are absolutely Hindu reactionary, anti-Christian. So he's training his network of churches and says, you know, we're going to have to rethink outreach and church planting, presuming that things are going to get progressively more hostile here in the next 10 to 20 years. So he's doing a lot of real forward thinking. And I mean, you hope it doesn't come to that, but he's just going, look, here's the way things are going. Here's their goals. Here's how we're going to react. We need to rethink how we function, reach out, and live as Christians in this country.
And I'm sorry to take up so much of your time, but I appreciate those additional insights you've given us, because that, of course, is another great update on India. And you've certainly added more fodder to our prayer fires, and we will be joining with Asian Access in praying, giving, and going. For now, that wraps up my questions. Was there anything I missed or anything you'd like to add?
No, I think that was good. Thanks for the extra time, because there's just so much context there. I know, you know, obviously edit it as you see fit, but, you know, I'll give you everything I got, and then you can go with it and see what you can do with it.
Yeah, and that's what I love, and thank you for that.